Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And we're back. Much to talk about in the news. And lucky us. We've got some friends over at MarketWatch now. Really excited to bring Ellie Ismaili Du on the line. And she is a market reporter for MarketWatch. Of course, a lot of great information over there. MarketWatch.com is the website. You can go there, check out Ellie's writings and information, as well as a lot of other great reporters that are weighing in with excellent subjects. So let me give you a quick introduction. It is a 30-minute show, so I can't cover everything that Ellie's done, but I'll give you real quick that she is a financial journalist at MarketWatch, which is part of the Wall Street Journal digital network, and she does a lot of focus on the financial markets, with especially on stocks and bonds, and she really focuses on those things that are some of the bigger movers and powerful forces within the financial area. She does a lot of focus on debt crisis and Greece and Puerto Rico, for example. And we're going to be talking with her about some of the things that have been happening most recently with the market since the beginning of 2016, and also some recent Federal Reserve actions and commentary. Ellie is a lawyer turned journalist, which is really interesting. She got a Master's of Science from Columbia University, the Journalist School, and also holds the European equivalent of a law degree from the Aristotle University of, I'm going to take a stab at this and Ellie will correct me, Thessaloniki is what I think is the name of the university, and she's a member of the Athens Bar Association in Athens, Greece. Did I get that right, Ellie? Correct me on that.
Yes, you got it perfect.
Whew, that was a mouthful. I had to take like a nap in the middle of saying that. That was a lot of work. I have enough trouble with English, let alone Greek. Well, listen, welcome to the program. I know you've been featured in a lot of wonderful places, the Wall Street Journal, Time Magazine, Forbes, Fox, Financial Times, Huffington Post. I mean, just all over the place. Thank you for your time. I know you're very busy. So can we dive in here? What is going on with the market?
Well, we're all trying to figure out what is going on. What we all know is that it's not good. So okay. Since the beginning of the year, we have had the worst start to a calendar year since 2009. Hmm. And 2009, as you might remember, was not a pretty time
to be
investing.
Mm-mm.
My intention is to break it down for the audience in a way that makes sense, because the problem often is that there's so much information out there. There is not a lack of information. There's a lack of context and understanding of that information. Basically, what we have seen over the past month and a half since the beginning of the year is sell-offs in financial markets, in stock markets all over the world. But this initiated in China, where a severe drop in equity indexes seemed to give warning signs that the world's biggest economy is not as, potent or as strong in demand and consumption as we once thought. So what does that translate into? Into worries about economic growth in the U.S. So China and the U.S. always hand in hand in this idea, who's doing better, who will drag whom down, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all of those worries then manifest in the financial market and in equities dropping across the board and resulting into the worst start to a calendar year since 2009.
Well, that's excellent, Ellie. That's a great way of kind of summarizing what's been happening. And, you know, as much as some may not want to recognize it, you know, the United States and China, we are very linked together. And,
exactly.
You know, this idea that, you know, they, of course, we have long been viewed as this economic growth engine with their economy growing at a pretty substantial rate. And that is just, you know, I think most people understand at some point, you know, when you it's no different than a very large corporation, you know, can post gargantuan earnings, but as a percentage, that percentage gets smaller and smaller. And there's only so long that a very large, or having grown very large, company or country, but for that matter, economically, can sustain that. And it's just the reality. It's to be expected. And then, of course, there's all kinds of other things going on. And as you know, China has had a voracious appetite for raw materials, precious metals, commodities, and all host of different things. And it's not just the United States that heavily is linked, but a lot of the developing countries, especially in that geographic and surrounding areas, even Australia and the like, are all affected. So it's very notable to see this change and how those things happening all the way around the globe are affecting us here in our country.
Exactly. And I'm glad you mentioned commodities and metals, and I will add to that oil. So oil is the secret force behind this market drought today. And the forces of supply and demand that you mentioned earlier are behind this severe drop in oil prices that then results in a severe drop in equity prices. So let's break it down in simple terms. Supply and demand. As supply rises and demand falls, prices tank, right? And this is exactly what is happening in the oil market right now in China, like you mentioned, is on the demand side of this equation. So as demand from China becomes lower and lower, while supply from Canada, the U.S., and all the OPEC countries continues to grow, the world is literally getting drowned in an oversupply of oil that cannot be sold. As a result, the price of oil tanks and there's no bottom in sight. As investors see oil tanking with no bottom in sight, they naturally dump the stocks in the energy sector. As the stocks in the energy sector continue to slide, the whole market slides with it. Hmm. So this is a correlation of pieces that move in tandem, and often investors can't understand what changed suddenly. Why was the stock market doing so well last year and suddenly it isn't? I mean, my life hasn't changed. Why is my stock portfolio suddenly losing its value so precipitously? Well, that's why, because it's connected to other forces across global markets.
Very interesting, Ellie. And, you know, the thing that is remarkable is that, you know, we have, of course, advanced technologies that are allowing more and more extraction and then an increasing production from, you know, suppliers that weren't here, 10, 20 years ago. And then also you have, you know, some of these ripples that are being created by, just as an easy example, Iran bringing their production back to the world markets. So it's, and then you do have some of the slack demand. And the ironic part is that nobody can stop. I mean, in other words, you know, some of these countries, as you know, are very, very dependent on their oil production for their country's revenues. Russia's in that category as well. And they don't have a choice. Even if the price is falling, they've got to compound the situation by pumping the same, if not more, oil to try to sustain their revenues.
Exactly, and they pay a heavy price for that. Russia, for example, saw its currency, the ruble, tank to an all-time low against the dollar precisely because of the oil conundrum. So they are trapped, like you said, and there's no way out of it unless this balance of supply and demand somehow shifts, but there is no way to shift that in sight for now.
Well, and the only way I know, and I tend to repeat this theory I have, because it kind of, you know, it's a lesson I learned early in my career that, you know, growth is the only way to, you know, solve some of the challenges. So the only way, I think, with what we see today is we've got to get more demand. And the only way to get more demand is for countries to grow, and therein lies this kind of circle or, you know, kind of potential conflict or the conundrum, as you described it, Ellie, that we have to have more demand, and if we get more demand, we can have growth. If we have growth, then, you know, that not only soaks up the demand, it's more tax revenue, it's all of those things, and so it's created a real challenge for investors. And the other side of it is, you know, certainly from an economic stimulation, and maybe this will be kind of the counterbalancing or swinging of the pendulum back, you know, with so much cheap energy, that is, of course, you know, when we see gas go to $1.50, there's talks now, even gas going to $1. When we see that, there's a lot, you know, if you just, let's say we got to $1, and you compare that to the, you know, when the gas prices went all the way up to $5 in 2008, 2009, right around there, that time period, you know, there's $4 a gallon differential that can go somewhere else. Now, my theory, and I'd like you to think about this, and we'll answer it after the break, is how that must, you know, impact the economy, at least here in the United States, where you have all of this money not being spent on gas that can go to other parts of the economy. And hopefully at some point that does create that stimulation and the growth that will then start to soak up some of the demand. Let's do this. Let's grab a quick break. We'll come right back with Elliot Esmiley-Du. Stay right there and we'll rejoin her in just a moment. Stay tuned.
Hello, this is Brenda Campbell, General Manager with Volusia Memorial Park and Funeral Home. We are committed to helping you with compassionate, professional, and personal service. When it comes to pre-planning for yourself or someone you love, a Digny Memorial Provider is the name you can trust for all your funeral, cremation, cemetery, and memorial service needs. Recording them and sharing them with your loved ones will help ensure your final arrangements will be what you want, easing the burden on your family and friends. We can be reached at 386-673-5373 or our website, VolusiaMemorialFunerals.com. Volusia Memorial Funeral Home in Port Orange and Ormond Beach. Life well celebrated.
The Rice and Rose Law Firm is celebrating 30 years of service in Volusia and Flagler Counties. I'm Paul Rice, President and Managing Partner of Rice and Rose. The Rice and Rose Law Firm has a department dedicated to estate planning, wills, trusts, and probate. We also provide legal guidance if you need a power of attorney, living will, or health care surrogate. Contact the Rice and Rose Law Firm at our Daytona Beach office at 257-1222 or visit our website at ricerosenlaw.com.
Since 1997, David Holland has built a solid reputation in our local community as an independent financial advisor. Just as important, Holland Financial's professional team has grown to include 3 experienced certified financial planners, a tax accountant, an attorney, 3 chartered financial consultants, accredited asset management specialists, and certified annuity specialists. Our attentive and professional staff gives prompt and individualized attention to each and every one of our clients. Count on Holland Financial for your financial advice, not only for today, but for many years to come. Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com.
And welcome back. Ellie Esmiley-Du on the line with us. Market reporter for MarketWatch, marketwatch.com. Great website, lots of resources. You can check out articles like The Bipolar Dow Industrial in Sharply Higher, Reversing Early Tumble, one of Ellie's recent articles that is a great read and very insightful. So, Ellie, there before we break, we were kind of breaking down the oil and what may come. And I kind of speculated, no pun intended, with the energy prices every $4 it is saved per gallon, from what it had been in the past. Of course, it's a smaller savings now. But, my theory, and it may just be that it takes a while, but eventually that what money is, of course, staying and working its way through the U.S. economy and being spent or saved in another way. And that would that at some point then, help to spur some economic activity and growth and thereby soak up some demand with, some of the supply with greater demand?
Well, the theory sounds as a theory, but sadly what we have seen on a practical basis is that the savings rate has climbed in the U.S., which means
okay.
that the money that, as you said, could have been spent instead of on gas on other goods or services, thus raising the consumption rate, is in fact going to savings and is raising the savings rate. So lately what we have seen is that not only the manufacturing sector is tanking to growth rates that are the lowest in 2 or 3 years, but last week we also got data from the services sector that also showed that the expansion of the services sector in the U.S. has hit lows last seen in 2003. So the question then becomes, what can spur growth? And that's when the big gorillas, as investors in hedge funds and other institutional funds like to call them, the central banks, right? That's where they come in. Because when we don't see growth happening inherently from the economy itself, the central bank comes in lowering interest rates or just pushing them into negative territory like Japan did a couple of weeks ago in order to spur growth artificially. Now, in the U.S., we are theoretically, again, in an opposite scenario. The Federal Reserve in December raised interest rates for the first time in nearly a decade.
Right.
So the whole world is pushing interest rates down to spur growth. and the U.S. is on a path to raise interest rates while growth already seems to be anemic. So that's a big conundrum right now for U.S. central bankers.
It is a big one, and it's interesting to note, and I think people scratch their heads and say, wait a minute, negative interest. So what really is happening for the policymakers in those countries is, look, we don't want you to save. We want, and we don't want you leaving the money. We want it, spend it, invest it, do something else with it. And you're right. We have a very different scenario being played out in the United States. And you know, I took note of Janet Yellen's recent comments, because she just was, you know, just recently here. She had her semi-annual commentary, I think it was, that she makes, and she had a really, you know, she really had to kind of thread the needle and walk a fine line between reassuring the markets that the Fed is not going to move too fast, but also reassuring the markets that the Fed will move fast enough. In other words, you know, neither too hot nor too cold, but just right in her commentary.
Exactly. And most of the analysts I talk to call her non-committal. It's like being in a committed relationship, but also not so committed. And it's true. Just like you said, it was a fine line she had to walk. On one hand, if she acknowledged publicly that the U.S. economy is in danger, that requires further stimulus and cutting interest rates, then the markets would panic. And we're already, like I said earlier, at our worst start to a calendar year since 2009. So she wouldn't want to do that. At the same time, if she said that the Fed is moving on with its path to raise interest rates again and again, markets would panic once again, because raising interest rates where the whole of the rest of the world is dropping interest rates to spur growth could mean the U.S. could very well be headed into economic slowdown. And it was quite interesting to hear her say that the U.S. Central Bank, the Federal Reserve, is monitoring the market turmoil, that it's true that growth, you know, doesn't look as good as it used to, but it still looks quite good.
Right.
And we will see what Federal Reserve policymakers have in mind in March, when they will have to come out and actually decide what they're going to do with interest rates for the future. Until March, it's anyone's guess.
Yeah, my guess, and it was just a guess, I would think, and of course, we don't have the same information they do. You know, they've got, the Federal Reserve, that group, the people on that board, you know, they have access to a lot of information that we, quote-unquote, regular people don't necessarily have.
Exactly.
And they are smart people, or they wouldn't be there. So I hope they make the right decision. But if I were guessing, I would not expect a rate increase just to allow some of this to settle down. What is very interesting, though, Ellie, to me, is how much sensitivity and this quote-unquote monitoring, as you referred to it, by the Fed of the markets, how much that has become more prominent with the Fed's role. You know, once upon a time, I don't think the Fed was nearly as concerned with the day-to-day or week-to-week or even month-to-month movements of the market as it set its policy.
That
and it seems more sensitive.
It can be seen as the Fed becoming a loving parent to the market. You know, when a toddler starts to take its first steps and the parent has to let them move, but also should be there if it tumbles to avoid, you know, an accident. And it almost seems like the market is expecting the Fed to play that role. Mm. And increasingly so, the Fed is taking up that role, and you see it everywhere. You see it among investors and analysts and strategists that I, as a journalist, have to, you know, talk to every day to understand what the market is talking about. And you even see it with different commentary in the media, on TV, or in writing on the internet, where investors are actually coming out and blaming the Fed for causing a market rout. By raising interest rates, as if the role of the central bank is to accommodate the market endlessly and creating growth that is not real, it's artificial, by keeping interest rates at ultra-low levels. So this is something that is like you said, quite obvious in the market and evident right now, and it wasn't the case a decade ago.
Right. Right. And, you know, this is not what is meant by accommodative monetary policy. It's not exactly to accommodate the market, but to be stimulative in nature. It is a bit of an evolution, I suppose, is what I really am trying to say, for the Fed. But I think that we are in a different time with having done so much QE, the quantitative easing. The Fed certainly doesn't want to squander all of those efforts with moving too quickly. So it will be interesting to see how that plays out. Let's do this. Let's grab another quick break, and I want to go to a couple other important subjects with Ellie. Ellie Esmaili-Du is our guest market reporter for MarketWatch. MarketWatch.com. Go to the website. Lots of great things. Quick break. Right back with Ellie. Stay right there.
Hi, I'm Teresa Ram with the Volusia Flagler YMCA. The YMCA has 6 locations to help you and your family reach their health and fitness goals. The WISE child care programs provide a safe and nurturing environment. So whether it's Kids Zone while you're working out, after school enrichment programs, kids fitness programs, or Camp Winona resident camp, the Y is a safe place for your child. For more information, check out www.vfymca.org.
Done right, done on time, or it's free. Holland Tax and Accounting Services, a division of Holland Financial, holds the same values our clients have trusted for almost 20 years. We have the financial expertise that will help you manage your business and personal financial priorities year-round, not just during tax season. Whether you are an individual or a business, Holland Tax can accommodate your needs for tax planning and preparation. For your business or personal finances, rely on Holland Tax and Accounting Services to deliver personal and detailed attention. Call 386-671-7526 to have your taxes done right, done on time, or it's free.
Hey there, we're back. Ellie Esmaili-Du on the line with us, market reporter for MarketWatch, marketwatch.com. Good stuff. Love going to MarketWatch. Enjoy the website, Ellie. I really do. I want to take advantage of our time together, and I hope it's not too predictable that I might just ask you real quick about Greece. And the reason I want to is that we heard so much, and maybe there's other things that have just gotten more of the headlines, but we heard so much about Greece, and then after that about Puerto Rico and some of these other, I know, these countries that you follow. I guess my first question, if you don't mind, is why haven't we heard so much about Greece? Is it just that these other things have hogged all the headlines, you know, Federal Reserve, the U.S. economy, China, of course, politics and all of that? Or has something changed to where it is not as much of a concern? Because it seems to me there's still quite a bit of road ahead for Greece. And so I'd be curious to get your take on that.
Yeah, that's a great question. Back in the summer in July, as Greece was holding that referendum to see whether they wanted to stay in the European Union or not, and that, of course, would have so many consequences, intended or unintended, on the currency and currencies all over the world. Like you said, everybody in the U.S. was talking about Greece. And then suddenly, the subject matter just stopped being of interest, and the question is why. Earlier during the show, we talked about this huge global market route that we've been in, which initiated in China. And I remember months ago, we would write these stories on MarketWatch saying, Greece is not your real problem, China is what you should be looking at. Greece, you know, 10 million people population, the debt, total debt of about $300 billion, and then China, right?
Yeah.
Second biggest economy in the world, biggest owner of U.S. treasuries after the U.S. itself, a huge force for global markets and growth or lack thereof. So to answer your question, I believe that the market is right to shift its attention to issues that are of more importance for U.S. investors because of the magnitude of the problem.
Okay.
Now, to your point, Greece is not, in fact, in a place where all of its problems have disappeared.
Right.
This couldn't be the case, right?
Not enough time's gone by.
So lately we've seen bond yields on Greek government debt spiking again because what happens in the resolution of the so-called Greek crisis is that bailout funding comes in installments. So every couple of months, the lenders send a committee to basically see how much of what was agreed upon has been implemented. And every single time this happens, markets are worried that Greece will not get its next installment. which could then trigger a default. So in the past week, we have seen bond yields on the Greek debt again spike. But analysts in general are thinking that the biggest danger, which was Greece exiting the Eurozone back in the summer, this would have been a disaster. This has been averted for now. So that's why people are not as worried for the time being.
Okay, so it's just more of kind of an ongoing maintenance that is really, and the potential spreading of this, which is, you know, the big thing, the domino, potential domino impact on the European countries who hold a lot of the Greek debt. And
exactly.
And that's, so that has abated because the basic message to the market and to the world is that we're going to, that the European Union is saying, hey, look, we're going to take care of Greece. We're not going to have them leave the euro. We're not going to, you know,
exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So that's helpful because I was really scratching my head and wondering why. And we've got about a minute left, Ellie. If you could also maybe give us a little bit of your perspective on Puerto Rico, because of course that's a lot closer to home. No pun intended.
Yeah, I mean Puerto Rico, and that was also part of my work at MarketWatch to try to show to U.S. investors that they should be worrying about Puerto Rico because Puerto Rican debt is in the hands of U.S. investors almost in its entirety.
Right,
and that's about $70 billion in debt, so it's not that enormous, but it's all in the hands of mom-and-pop investors. So your audience should be looking at their bond portfolios to see if they own Puerto Rican debt. And about 70% of all households did up until the crisis started. So there's a good chance that some of this debt is in our listeners' hands without them even knowing that.
Well, that's the key point, is not necessarily to do any type of knee-jerk reaction, but just to know how
exactly.
much of
know
it
what you
have.
Own.
Yeah, well, imagine that, Ellie. Know what you own. Thank you. That's excellent. If you just joined us, great program, great interview with Ellie Ismailadou, Market Watch reporter, marketwatch.com, and it's excellent commentary and very timely and insightful, Ellie. I love what you're doing. I applaud your work, and I love to have you on the program. We'll have to do it again when you have some time.
That would be great. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.